You know, there are people who love meat. And then again, there are people who really love meat. I think you'd have to say Mr. Cutlets falls into the latter camp. Mr. Cutlets calls himself the veteran of countless hours at the chop table and an informal advisor on meat matters. His newest book is called Meet Me in Manhattan. So, what's so great about meat?
Well, on the one hand, there's the profound reanimating sensation of an animal going inside me and giving all of its life up so that I can ingest it. But that is just a kind of a sort of a metaphysical rapture. The truth is that the actual act of biting into a well-cooked piece of meat, particularly one that has a blackened or bronzed or golden surface with a crunch that yields to a rich and succulent interior that is both salty and sweet, mild, with various meaty notes, it's incomparable, and I think it almost transcends philosophy, appreciation, and morality, too.
Yeah, I guess now that you've established your position on the meat lover's scale, maybe we ought to talk about what you think, if you could choose, would be the perfect meat eater's dinner.
The perfect meat eater's dinner. Well, it's a good question, and one I've given a lot of thought to over the years, because it always seemed to me that sort of the defining question you have to face is what you would have for your last meal. For me, if I had to have my last meal, I would differentiate it. There's my last meal, and then there's the ultimate meat eater's meal. The ultimate meat eater's meal is probably dinner at a churrascaria, the Brazilian redizio style, where they just keep bringing out armies of men carrying skewered roasted meats of every, you know, possible animal and cut. That's a really a heroical undertaking. If it were my last meal, I think I probably would want to have a pastrami sandwich at Katz's Delicatessen cut from the Deckel.
You'll have to explain what the Deckel is for those of us who are not as knowledgeable as you.
Well, the Deckel is, it's sort of like a fatty lip on the top of the brisket, or in the case of pastrami, the navel. It's a richer and more succulent, more intensely flavored. It's really the pastrami lover's pastrami cut. Mm. You just can't beat it.
Well, let's talk a little bit then about some of the kinds of meat. You've done a fair amount of exploration of the different ways in which meat can be prepared and eaten. Beef is as good a place as any to start, maybe the best of all. What do you think of the varieties of meat? What kind of gourmet beef is there out there?
Well, it's funny you mention that. We're living in a time right now where, because of the increasing leanness of American cattle, what used to be called prime beef has become much more of a luxury item, almost in some cases closer to caviar or something like that. And when people talk about, for example, Kobe beef or American Wagyu-style beef, essentially they're talking about beef, usually short loin steaks, fillets, and porterhouses, which are very well marbled, which are beautifully red and juicy, which have a lot of intramuscular fat. And those steaks are very much what regular supermarket steaks were like 30 years ago.
What about Kobe beef? You mentioned Kobe beef. What does that mean?
Well, Kobe beef is a specialty kind of beef that is raised by a diabolical process devised by the Japanese. A cow which is fed and raised to be extremely juicy is raised in a tiny stall, in many cases suspended in a hammock, fed beer and massaged by attendants before being dispatched and then served to gourmands in expensive restaurants. I've eaten Kobe beef, and I have to tell you, I'm not so crazy about it.
What is it about it? It sounds as though, leaving aside whatever notions you may have about raising a beef in a hammock in order to eat it, it sounds as though that is likely to have those attributes that you were talking about, being fatter and juicier.
Well, it is fatter and juicier, but a big thing with meat is that animals tend to taste, to some extent, like what they eat, you know? And the taste of beef that's been raised largely on beer tastes not unlike beer. In fact, I would describe Kobe beef as being more like a cross between the taste of beef, the taste of beer, and the taste and consistency of foie gras. So I would rather stick with a cow that has been, you know, eaten regular pasture hay and sweet alfalfa and been fattened up on chop over the winter, so.
And hasn't raced around the paddock too much.
Well, those Kobe cows don't do too much racing. I mean, it's almost like what they do to geese in terms of foie gras.
Where they force feed them to enlarge the liver.
Right, you know, and they sit in darkness. It's a very creepy business all around.
Well, we've spent a lot of time talking about beef, but it is by no means the only meat that there is, especially for Mr. Cutlips. You, I'm told, feel that a good pork chop can be even better than perhaps a New York strip?
It really comes down to how much meaty pleasure you can get out of any given meat. I mean, I for one, when I think about the greatest meat experiences I've had, many of them have been beautiful, golden, deep-fried pork chops, or chuletas, as they call them, served in Spanish-American restaurants and Chino Latino diners with a beautiful bronze, arcing, golden rim and odd ribbons of fat running in between. Pork chops are one of God's perfect foods, but I feel just as strongly about bacon and some sausages and even very low forms of pork, such as scrapples and souse.
So there's something about pork that sets it aside. In fact, in Meet Me in Manhattan, you write that that you can use everything about a pig?
Everything but the squeal. That's what they, that's what they used to say. The hard-hearted men in slaughterhouses used to say. Yeah, pork is really the most popular meat, I think, around the world. Everyone raises pigs, and in many cases, the pigs raise themselves. Some places in America, certainly in the 18th century, pigs would just be let loose to forage for themselves in the forest. And because they were so easy to raise and are so easy to raise, everyone tends to keep them around and then cook them in so many wonderful different ways. The char siu and spare ribs served in Cantonese barbecue, the fabulous spare ribs served in Texas, the pulled pork of North Carolina. When you think about the wonderful bacons that are made all over the country, Canadian bacon, various hams, fresh hams, pernil, the breadth and range and power and beauty of pork is equal almost to the human race that makes it in every continent and clime.
Is the treatment of pigs a little bit better? It makes it sound as though it's so easy to raise them that maybe they don't suffer as much from the factory farms as some other animals do?
No, they suffer plenty in factory farms. There's a hideous series of books and comics by an artist named Sue Coe that depicts their sufferings, and I try not to think about them too much. The pigs that forage for themselves, they tend not, you know, not to be as good, really. I mean, pigs, to be really juicy, need to be really fat. And the preternaturally fat pigs that are raised in slaughter lots are tastier than the ones that walk around a lot and use their muscles rather than, you know, just waiting to be turned into meat. Again, it's a sad paradox, but true.
You know, more and more people these days are eating meat perhaps because of the Atkins diet. It sounds as though you've been an Atkins diet celebrator before there was even an Atkins.
I often say I've been on Atkins since I was born. Well, the actual Atkins diet, per se, is a very difficult thing to follow because, you know, you eat one spoonful of hash browns and all the weary work is in vain. But if you're going to lose weight and you're going to be on a diet, I cannot think of a more wonderful invention in our time than the Atkins diet. I mean, that you can keep hip deep in steaks and chops and still be burning calories like an endurance runner. I mean, if someone would have told me that that was possible 20 or 30 years ago, I would look like Bruce Jenner today.
You heard it there from Mr. Cutlets. His newest book is called Meet Me in Manhattan.